Here we go. The wooden wagon that we use for 3 hours to spread news and opinion. Tom drives it normally, and then we find out after Tom hurts his leg, the thing is self-driving. Why didn't you tell me it was self-driving?
It's for me to know and you to find
out,
John.
You're up there with a whip, whipping away at the horse. I'm like, gee, wow, look at Tom going at him. Here comes the wagon now, and it is self-driving. There's a celebrity who sits in the wagon. Doesn't even have to drive the thing, but does have to hold on to the teeny tiny lady in the pickle jar. Who's in the wagon today?
Alrighty then.
Don't try to explain this show to anybody. Okay, city council wants to do everything they can to make sure that the streets are full of people walking or on bicycles. They decide, hey, let's do this. They need, we need more houses. Developers are coming in. If you're going to build a thing that's got 30 units or more, you're going to have to do something to encourage the people that are taking over those apartments, those condos, or those townhouses to reduce the number of single occupancy vehicles.
Yeah, this is about if you live outside the downtown core of Seattle,
yeah.
You want to, in effect, discourage single drivers to go into town.
Right.
And so they are now requiring, based on an 8-0 vote, a unanimous vote of the city council, they have to choose any developers that are going to do this of a certain size. They have a list of options. Excuse me.
It's okay, Tom. Tom's getting all choked up just thinking about the list of options, which we'll be hearing from him.
I got all choked up because it's such a good thing for me. One of the options they have is providing bus passes for tenants. Yay! Orca cards for everyone.
Right.
Pretty exciting. Or building sidewalks to make it more walkable, I guess.
Yes.
Or limiting the amount of parking available, which is going to drive more people crazy. Although that's no longer. We went from requiring every apartment to have a parking space to now requiring that they don't.
Yes. developers love that.
A lot of cases. I know the developers should come out ahead on that score.
Covered parking, underground parking, on average, and this number is from a couple years ago, to build one parking spot that's underground is $35,000.
No, it's crazy.
Crazy. So yeah. What happens is some people don't even have a car, but they're paying for that. I got to know what the city realizes this. The developers don't pay. Right? The developers won't pay. So the Orca card will be paid for by whom?
Well, by the developers.
No.
They can charge whatever they want for the rental of the room.
Right. So they're like, oh, we're going to screw the developers. We'll get the developers. No, you don't.
Okay.
You're making the cost of the house, because we talk about affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
You're adding to the additional cost of the house. So, we want affordable housing. Oh, really? Then you're going to slam this on top of the developer, and the developer takes this and passes this along.
I know. And we've had this conversation a million times.
Yes.
The thing is, that's true of any tax. Mm-hmm. But if that's the case, then why would businesses object to taxes? They'll just pass it on to the consumer because it does impact the sales to some degree. So you have to determine that. Now,
this is not a tax, though. There's a difference between this and a tax.
Well, no, but the whole idea of a tax, you could argue, well, if I tax this B&O tax, well, then the people that are suffering, the business has to pay that tax, then it can just pass it on to the consumer.
No, the businesses pay tax on the revenue. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, but the point is that you can have an objection to anything because anything could be passed on. And yet they still yelp, businesses do, and understandably so, whenever the taxes go up.
Developers won't yelp about this.
In this case, well, maybe not. We'll have to see. I mean, they do have to provide bus passes or create sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
So it could increase costs. But you're right. By not having to require parking spaces, it might save them as well. So maybe it'll even be cheaper in the long run.
Do you think somebody who buys a $1 million condo is going to get on the bus? I got $1 million. I just spent $1 million on a condo. I just put down $200,000. I'm going to get on the bus? Honestly, I'm going to ride with a bunch of urine-stained individuals on the way to work with my $1 million condo.
Well, what do you mean? You're a urine-stained millionaire, so, I mean, why would you have any problem with us on the bus with urine stains?
That is a condition from a gardening accident. You know that.
The point here is that we want to reduce the number of people driving to town. If you had a $1 million condo, you probably already live in the core of downtown, and so it doesn't matter. But if you're commuting, if you're moving from one place to another, you want to encourage this. Now, they're trying to limit it to like 36% of people that live outside that come into town. I mean, there are, it's not like anybody. If you got $1 million or $1 billion, you probably can do whatever you want.
Card.
That's right. But we're talking about not everybody that's going to be a $1 million urine-stained driver. The point is here that the city is trying to accommodate the fact that we're having 115,000 new jobs created in this town, and we want to make sure that there's traffic that's going to be non-congestible for all you $1 million drivers.
I would say this. then you know what? The story that we saw about a year, year and a half ago, that 80% of Seattle is non-buildable in that the way they've zoned these things, because everybody wants their little tiny bungalow, like the thing you have over there in Wallingford or Green Lake.
Yep.
They don't want you to be able to build more, because if supply goes up, the price comes down. I remember one time saying to Mayor Mike McGinn, I said, hey, he goes, oh, we're going to solve that problem on I-5. I said, don't solve it. The reason my house in Queen Anne costs $700,000 is because your traffic sucks so bad. People want to live in Queen Anne because they don't want to live out in Lynnwood and come in on I-5. I said, as soon as you solve that problem on I-5, the price of my house goes down. As soon as somebody puts in more homes in a neighborhood like where you live, Tom, the value of your house decreases.
That's not true.
No. Let me tell you something. If they had, no, because it's all about supply and demand.
No.
It's a relationship between supply and demand. So your house has a value because there's not something else to compete against your home.
But what happens on our block is this. I mean, this is literally happening. We are all living in teardowns. I can make a lot more money by selling my house and selling it to a developer who will put more units in. And because of that, they'll end up making more profit. The idea isn't that it lowers the value. In fact, our property values are probably going up because they realize, oh, my God, each of us is living in a house. It's a teardown, and they'll build something more expensive. It happened already in one house, and it was a teeny tiny little, like a two-room house. And somebody built a really gorgeous one of these models.
I got it. But Tom, there is a tipping point.
$1.5 million or
something. I got it. But there's a tipping point because price is the intersection between supply and demand.
Yes.
So as more houses become available, we see it right now. There's the reason houses' values are coming down is because there's more inventory. When the inventory goes up, the consumer is not squeezed to hurry up and make a choice, which then causes the other guy who wants to sell his house to have to drop the price. These little bungalows, these little neighborhoods in Seattle that are, so big, liberal, big. Big-hearted folks talking about affordable housing. You know what? Then let them start building those multi-units in their neighborhood.
What they do allow for mother-in-law apartments, what used to be called mother-in-law apartments. I mean, there are concessions, but there is. I mean, you raise it's a sticking point because right now you want to be socially conscious and liberal. At the same time, you want to keep a kind of aesthetic. Of Seattle, and it's that balance, and that's
it's not
why they
the aesthetics.
Start.
It's the bottom line of their investment in their home.
See, I really don't think so. I'm all about the aesthetics on our street. You can't park on one side of our street because of the aesthetics of that street. It's not of any value to us. It makes it seem more like a park, and I think that's
again,
a positive.
You have to admit that you are an anomaly.
Seattleites are an anomaly.
No, you
I got
are.
The most
oh, I don't
people
care
on
about
my
the
block.
Price. I just like the fact that I can look at my trees.
It's true.
Oh, you're kooky land. We're going to add that to the beginning of the show. You have to introduce yourself as an anomaly.
Well, as long as you introduce yourself as an analogy, I'm good with being an anomaly.
All right. Let's see. Tim Hyman is back at it. Down for the count. He comes back.
No, this guy will. He's like a cockroach. He'll never die.
That's not nice. No, it's... Tim Hyman is on Dory talking about the fact that we're going to get those $30 car tabs back.
It's just such a positive thing. The voters have twice voted for $30 tabs. They stayed down for about 14 years, but only in the last 2 years have they skyrocketed.
Yeah. Okay. He says he's frustrated with Sound Transit.
Because they're using this unfair, dishonest vehicle valuation schedule to artificially take more money than they should be really entitled to, and our initiative gets rid of that.
Okay. So $30 car tabs.
Cripple, I guess, is the word rather than kill. All Sound Transit and 60 other cities that use the car tabs to pay for local transportation issues. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be disruptive. He is what Tim Hyman's after. He's after Sound Transit, and this guts the way Sound Transit has made money. And then you have to ask yourself, if you have problems with the way Sound Transit's raising its money, do you really want to stop it in midstream? Because then you've got like a lot of half projects involved too. But anyway, we'll see it. I mean, the car tab thing has passed.
It'll pass again.
Unless the consequences are made clear, it very well may.
Well, since Sound Transit's going to carry 2%, that means 98% of commuters that care about car tabs. We screw the 2% since so few people will actually be taking the train. You will see the vote go for $30 car tabs.
Well, Sound Transit has been successful at the polls, but you're right. There was a lot of upset in the way they determine the price of your car, the value of your car.
That was the shocker for people. Yeah. They were like, whoa, what's the value of my car? I'd love to be able to sell it for that. Dick's Drive-In is also a victim of Sound Transit, as you are as well, as you pay for
Not
your
yet.
Car.
This is just a proposal, John. Dick's is sending out the alarm. Hey, everybody.
Yeah.
One of the options for putting in Sound Transit down south is to knock out that shopping center that includes Dick's Drive-In, which just went in December.
Here's the executive vice president of Dick's.
We are on a list of potential properties, a very short list, that Sound Transit may acquire through eminent domain to build their operations and maintenance facility. This is a 30-acre facility, so we would be one of several pieces of property that would be taken. An operations and maintenance facility to clean and maintain the trains for the South Link light rail.
Buses would be a lot less expensive, but it says that we really need a hop, hoping that she's making us lucky.
So one of the other locations is the Midway landfill, and we're very grateful to the mayor of Kent and others. Other leaders in the South Sound have been really pushing for that as the optimal site. It's a blighted piece of property. It will have no other use other than something like this, some kind of transit-related or government-related development. And we think that that is the obvious choice. And we understand Sound Transit has to investigate more than one potential option, but to choose us and the Lowe's Shopping Center and take out our brand new restaurant along with other retail establishments that are doing well there on Pacific Highway South in Kent, it doesn't make any sense to us at all.
There you go.
Midway Shopping Center is thrilled that Dick's is there because they're, Dick's is the only organization that probably has the impact and power, you know, the potential influence component to save them. Already, Kent Council has already passed an emergency zoning ordinance saying, no, leave Dick's alone, leave Dick's alone. We want you to go to that landfill as well. The chances of it going to the landfill, I think, are pretty good. But Dick's, this is just an alarm bell from the Dick's people.
That, yeah.
Don't let this happen to us.
It would be appropriate that Sound Transit would be in a landfill. Let's see. Billionaire Bill Gates is photographed standing. Boy, it's like it's the Dick's hour here, Tom.
Yeah.
He's at a Dick's Drive-In in Seattle. Stop, everybody. Second richest man in the world goes to Dick's to buy a hamburger.
And he's at the Wallingford one, and they talk about it's just an amusing thing. So, this showed up on, I didn't realize there was a Microsoft alum Facebook page, I guess, and this picture was posted, and then it was posted more universally to other people, and just shows that he mentions, you know, it's great being a millionaire or a billionaire and that you can do anything. But, you know, at some point, a hamburger still is just a hamburger. When you buy a hamburger, it's still the same old thing, and that's what you feel like, and good for him. He is one of the most visible billionaires around. Yeah. I never saw Paul Allen in my many years here, you know, randomly bumping into him, but I've seen him. I mean, he's been at theater shows. I've been at movies and at Dick's.
Did you see his security? Because I ran into him at Star Wars over at the, what's the name of the big Cinerama?
Cinerama Theater.
And he's standing in line in front of me.
Yeah?
And he's just waiting in line, just like me waiting in line.
I
tapped him on the shoulder and said, so what are you looking forward to? He goes, oh, hey, you know, they put on, this is good. I like these movies. And he said whatever he wanted to say about it. I've had my shirt inside out all day. No one said anything to me.
I thought it was a woman dress thing.
I thought it was just a curly forward shirt.
Curly quirk.
Okay,
that's upsetting.
So anyway, so if you saw Bill Gates wearing a shirt inside out, would you say something to him?
You would. That's upsetting, you guys.
So anyway, he's very accessible. And, you know, he kind of like pretends that he's a regular guy.
And, my pants are on backwards. What the hell's going on? No one said anything about that. All right, let's go
to the bathroom.
There we go. Oxycontin. Boy, I think they've got these things. This is a rumor that's been around for a number of years.
Yeah.
And here's what you heard. The creators of OxyContin lied to doctors and hid the research that said these things are highly addictive. And they pushed and pushed and pushed, very similar to what was happening during the tobacco industry when those guys in the 40s, 50s, and 60s were hiding research showing there's a direct link between smoking cigarettes and cancer.
Right.
OxyContin, they said, we're going to catch you guys. We're going to find you guys. We think you knew that this stuff was highly addictive. You ignored the statistics. You ignored that. You continued to push them into doctors' offices, and you were lying to the doctors, and the doctors were writing scripts, and you realized, hey, we can really push this pill.
That's right. And now there is a court case that's going on, and prosecutors have now claimed that they have emails from the founder of the family that ran the Purdue Pharmacy that seemed to indicate as much.
The Sackler family is so wealthy, there's a wing at New York's Metropolitan Museum of Art named after them. They own Purdue Pharma, the maker of one of the most widely prescribed and abused painkillers in America, OxyContin. In 2001, when Richard Sackler was head of the company, he wrote this email. "We have to hammer on abusers in every way possible," he wrote. "They are the culprits and the problem. They are reckless criminals." The emails are part of a court filing by the Massachusetts Attorney General. The filing alleges Richard Sackler directed Purdue staff not to tell doctors the truth about how powerful OxyContin was.
We now know that Purdue and Sackler family were pushing for the strongest possible dosage to be prescribed because they made more money. The stronger the dosage, the more money they made. But the stronger the dosage, the more people died.
When OxyContin was first released, the Massachusetts filing says, Richard Sackler told a crowd, the launch of OxyContin tablets will be followed by a blizzard of prescriptions. The Sackler family referred NBC News to Purdue, which said in part, the attorney general cherry-picked emails, and the complaint is littered with biased and inaccurate characterizations of these documents. But Debbie Boris is furious. We've followed her family for years. Her son Danny started on painkillers, including OxyContin, in high school, then turned to heroin.
They pushed a product, they pushed a drug that they knew would hurt people. I had a good boy who had a future, and he doesn't right now.
Their life, she says, will never be the same.
Mm. This case, of course, will get more and more attention as this ends up going to trial, and you have to be able to have all information revealed. I remember the story I'd read in the New York Times a number of years ago that the government came along and said to the creators of OxyContin, the people are taking your pills, they're smashing them up, and they're burning them, turning them into a liquid, and then injecting them. So create the pill, but make sure it can't be altered into a different state. Yeah. So they did that with OxyContin, oxycodone, I forget which one it was. And then because of that, people were unable to inject it. Then you had fentanyl and some other cheaper stuff come in underneath it. So as much as the government tried to stop the stuff, people then found some other alternative that was cheaper and perhaps even more dangerous. So,
yep, and it's tricky. I mean, in defense of the company, they say that they were cherry-picked, that those emails are not reflective. But on the face of it, they seem pretty damning.
Let's see. Fast break. Come back. We'll talk about the fact that most Americans don't want to see political ads during the Super Bowl. Are you with them, Tom, or are you some sort of an anomaly?
No, I prefer to be an analogy. I see if it's a good ad, I don't care if it's political, even if it's not my political persuasion. I prefer the art of the campaign to the message.
Oh, so something Paul Harvey talking about farmers is okay with you?
Sure.
Okay. How about Aldi talking about how women don't get paid as much as men?
I love that.
Okay.
As long as it's a good commercial, John.
And you define good as what?
Aesthetically pleasing.
Oh, okay.
That's all. Not, you know, the political message. I lean to the left, but I love the right if they're clever about it.
We'll be right back. All right. You write to us online, Trading Academy text line, 98973, 98973. Great way to get to us. Text safely and legally, I might add. That was my New Year's resolution. Put the phone down and put it in the glove compartment while I get in the car.
Well, good for you, John.
Haven't been able to do it. Most Americans don't want to watch political ads when it comes to the Super Bowl. Amen. You're tuning in to watch the Patriots get their ass kicked. You don't want to be bothered with a bunch of political stuff. What's wrong, Ursula? Do you really want the Patriots to win?
I'm just, the way you put it.
I hate the Patriots.
Clearly.
Well, good. We got three chances out of four to have somebody else win the Super
Patriots
Bowl.
In there again?
Yeah.
Okay.
They look damn good though in the last game.
I don't care. Okay. It's like Bob Hope special. Remember that? Tonight, a Bob Hope special. That was an oxymoron. There's such thing about Bob Hope special. Bob Hope specials were on all the time. Same thing. And after a while, you didn't care about it anymore. Seeing the Patriots play again, it's like a Bob Hope special.
Okay. So answer me this. What if you had an anti-Patriots ad on the Super Bowl? Would you like that?
Yeah, I would love that.
Okay, well, that's
going to
be
political. But it's not political. That's not political.
Because they're both friends of Trump's.
Okay,
so it's a good way to root against New England by showing them how Trumpian they are.
We have seen, whether it was 84 Lumber,
that's political.
84 Lumber that had the picture of the wall, and you saw the mom and the daughter come up to the wall, the border wall.
Yeah, that was great.
By the way, Fox made them edit that. Did you know that? They took they made them take out a bunch of scenes out of that thing. So then when people got word, hey, that's not the complete ad, their 84 Lumber's website crashed because so many people wanted to get on and see the unedited.
That's a good ad.
So Aldi did the same thing with the continued lie that women women are not paid as much as men. They had that one going. And then the other one was the Budweiser guy comes over from another country, treated poorly as an immigrant. Right.
Yeah.
So it was political. It was hot. People talked about it. But when they did a survey just a couple days ago, they said, do you want to see political ads? Most people said no.
And I think my only problem with the question, because I think the survey's accurate, is that it depends. I still think it depends on the commercial. If it's clever or funny and all that, they don't mind the politics.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just on a do I want to see a political ad? Probably not, because we just got through a midterm elections. We're probably sick of political ads. But if it's really cleverly handled, you know, like the Gillette ad, people would love to see that.
Anyway. No, you walk right into it.
Yep.
All right. So at 60-some percent say they don't want to see it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I think that's probably true. And 60% won't see it because they'll be too busy stuffing their face with salsa and chips than watch the Super Bowl.
Do you think that somebody like Audi knows, or someone like 84 and Lumber knows, that it will divide and you're going to have one side and the other, and it's better to be remembered than to necessarily not be remembered when it comes to an ad?
I think any company as big as Audi knows there's a risk.
Right.
And usually companies are risk averse.
Yes.
But if you're going to spend all that money on a Super Bowl ad, you might as well make it, you know, make an impression, create a stance. Now, I do think it could backfire if it was really something that turned everybody off. But for instance, there's this nice discussion about the Colin Kaepernick ad for Nike was a huge hit. Now, it got blasted by a lot of people on the right. And a lot of people thought, what are you doing? You're aligning yourself with a quarterback who the NFL has sort of like pretended has disappeared. Why are you in effect attacking the NFL? Mm-hmm. Well, they used him as a model for bold action, which is what Nike likes to identify itself with. Mm-hmm. And because of that, and maybe because it leaned more left than right, I don't know if there's a different reaction on social media, but social media seemed to love it 7-1 in terms of a preference, unlike this Gillette ad, which is 4-1 against.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that you create a kind of a martyr image or an iconic role of somebody who's willing to risk it all. That was very divisive, very political, and it seemed to benefit the company.
I guess if you understand who your consumer is, then you're basically doing an ad to them. I just looked up, they list who bought what car and whether or not they voted for Trump.
Uh-huh.
45% of people own Lexus voted for Trump.
The rich people.
Yeah.
What? How many?
32% voted for Trump that own an Audi.
Yeah.
So they look at the overwhelming majority are liberal that drive Audis, and they say, look at this. They would probably go along with this hogwash.
Yeah.
So we're playing
truth
a tune
serum
that everybody agrees to. They on the interesting part about the Nike versus Gillette, it's kind of cool how somebody has analyzed that you can buy more sneakers or buy more shirts or more pants and stuff or socks from Nike. But people do not change their buying habit when it comes to razor blades.
Yes.
They don't buy more overpriced razors.
And you don't buy razors for a political reason or for a cause. You're after manufacturing competence and efficiency, and that's what Gillette is known for. They suspect that despite the blowback on Gillette, it's not going to hurt their sales because people that buy Gillette don't do it for any kind of social statement causes. But the reason they say, what's the difference between the two ads? Gillette was actually asking its consumers to change their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
What Nike was trying to do was inspire their consumers to do something bold. It didn't say you should be like Colin Kaepernick. You should defy your bosses, or you should take a stand when it's unpopular. They're just saying, in effect, be bold, be different, stand up for what you believe in. That's an easier comment. But you're right. People aren't going to buy more Gillette razors. They already have 50% of the industry now.
Plus, you don't take your razor out in public.
Yes.
The guy wears a Nike shirt. So we saw immediate reaction when you had Colin Kaepernick on that ad.
Yeah.
People were putting up pictures of themselves on YouTube burning all of their Nike stuff and set their shoes on fire and stuff. And then other people bought it as a way of saying, I'm with Nike.
Right.
I'm with Colin Kaepernick.
Yeah.
I'm with whatever stuff he's talking about.
Yeah.
Right. But people don't walk around with their Gillette razors.
That's right. A lifestyle choice is maybe reflected in how you shave, but you do it in privacy of your home. You wear Nike products, and you're more apt to buy more Nike products because they have all their, you know, a whole line of clothing. Gillette, they basically have their razors.
Here's a bit of the ad.
The Me Too movement against sexual harassment.
Is this the best a man can get? Instead of excuses, we need to make change.
Come on. Men need to hold other men accountable.
not how we treat each other, okay?
Because the action we take today will be seen by the men of tomorrow.
I've watched the ad a number of times that have come around to this. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, you're here.
No, I mean,
yeah.
It's like, what are they asking to do? Be nice to one another?
Yeah. Woo! Yeah, but I mean, that is good. Be the best you can be as opposed to, you know, be the best you can get, which is what they used to, you know, the Gillette was the best you can get. It's a call to arms or call to action.
Right.
But in this case, the objection to it, there's twofold. From the right, obviously, it seems to imply that, oh, just being a regular guy is a version of toxic masculinity, which they don't say, but the right thinks is implied.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also being attacked from the left because they say, hey, you've got this basic big corporation trying to buy into the hashtag Me Too movement and or, you know, let's improve male interactions with the world in such a way that it's corporate taking over a good message, and they resent that. So it's losing on both counts.
If they had come out with this thing and the whole toxic masculinity nonsense, the problem is that they don't want to be grouped together, but they're thrown into that. So when people watch it, they just make a sweeping generalization that somehow Gillette is in on the idea that masculinity can be toxic. I think they get swept in and they're not part of that.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they apparently miscalculated, although if it doesn't hurt their sales, it's not going to be that big a deal.
I saw today on a crazy right-wing website, somebody goes, oh, yeah, look at Gillette. Here's a bunch of pictures of women in very, very tight clothes that Gillette had them wear. It says Gillette across the rear ends. Have you seen that?
No. Is this past? It's not part of their new campaign.
No, not part of it. It's just the idea, like, you want it both ways.
Well, yeah. In fact, that's exactly right. That's the corporate takeover of messages.
We'll be right back. Go. Mailman's going to come by. Don't forget to Care Partners, Senior Living sponsors all of our mail. We certainly appreciate their continued support. And nice to have a new sponsor on board, Care Partners, Senior Living. Here comes the mailman.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Jacob, you have lots of underwear?
I own a lot of underwear.
Oh, good. Here comes the teeny tiny lady. She can tell us about the letter of the day, but first, let's get started.
Tom. Start off with the big Microsoft donation of $500 million for our housing, affordable housing. 425 writes in, is lending money charity? Are the banks lending money to builders being charitable to the homeless?
Mm.
I think it's a confusion. I think the money is a donation to allow for loans to be, dealt out for affordable housing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how it works.
253, giving it to a private company to do what the government can't.
Mm-hmm. 425, okay, I'll ask, what housing crisis? The homeless on the streets aren't there because of a housing crisis. And development was going like gangbusters until the crash of 2007 when most of the developers went out of business. If there was a demand for housing, those developers would be back in a New York minute. The building would undoubtedly be in the burbs and beyond, but that is how it's always been. Stop it already with the housing crisis.
There we go. Don't call it a crisis. Andy from the Road Less Traveler. Hey ho, fellas, and happy friggin' Friday Eve. Fellas, it's been pointed out by another listener who should go nameless, Wes, that I tend to the verbose. No denial. I enjoy wordplay, and perhaps my favorite wordplay are oxymorons. And those who aren't familiar with oxymorons, two words, so the phrase contradicts one to the other. Like jumbo shrimp, rap music, so we brain help leapt and join when the morning's first segment of new ones was added to lexicon John Curley's small diatribe. Excellent. I hope that Andrew's marked the time, and though I'm not a greedy man, I hope to be listening to the day he coins the phrase completely sane psychotic rant. That's all, fellas. Have a good day, and go Pats, worst football team in the history of the NFL.
Via Doom Day 4, 360. Could the government shutdown be having an effect on traffic?
Ooh, that's good. 206, if I hear another meaningless interruption about the viaduct, I'm going to give myself a Dutch oven. When do we get to say Sully has overreacted?
And 206, maybe next week. 206, the absolute best thing about the viaduct closure is that we get to hear Sully's voice through the 9 o'clock hour. Sully, don't let John and Tom beat you up too much. You are our traffic savior.
Tom's Vocabulary 650 says, show segment idea, Tom's Vocabulary Roundup, where he can have a word of the day. I just looked up dearth. Tom, Help us in Curly's, helping us in Curly's world.
Tim Hyman, 253. Tom, you nailed it. Tim Hyman is the human cockroach. Freaky, disturbing, out there somewhere lingering. And even when you just think of him, it makes your skin crawl. Ugh. Well, that's a little more than I suggested. But P.S. And I don't even own any underwear at all. So there, Jacob.
You are a rude, terrible person.
Yeah, you are. Impeachment. Dell in Dallas says, I really hope they pursue the impeachment of the only true non-essential government employee.
And 425. The Atlantic is leftist/progressive publication.
Yes, it is. No one doubts that. Doug in Lacey. I'm tired of it. I voted for Trump. Now I wish he would just walk away and tell everybody screw off and disappear and let Mike Pence be president and see what the wingnut liberals complain about next.
Oh, with Pence, there'll be plenty. 425. I fully expect an impeachment argument will surface for every president from here on in. It started with Clinton and continued with Bush, Obama, and now Trump. Ironically, the only president to deserve impeachment but escape that fate was Reagan for his role in Iran-Contra, but he got Oliver North to take a bullet for him.
206, I bet $1 million you couldn't do nails, Curly, because your skills are limited.
Okay. Zing. And 206, the dog is on the Justice Channel. Is that right?
Oh, I don't know. Bounty dog? I've never even bounty heard of the Justice. Yeah, he's talking about Bounty Hunter.
All right. Natalie Ice Scholarship, Jess in West Seattle. What do Natty Ice and having sex in a canoe have in common? They're both darn near water.
That's good.
No, that's not the joke. Wait, that isn't the, that's not
how the
joke
goes. Right, yes. Yeah. Okay. Rich people budgets. Mm-hmm. Glory in the 707. In one of the Ocean movies, the best line is uttered, I want my last check to bounce. Yes. Travel, buy a Lamborghini, buy the best underwear, and lots of it.
Okay, developer paying for bus passes, 206. Tom, regarding a free bus pass, sounds like you're in luck. You're in coming back in the play again. Okay.
And 425, a lot of people I know and myself won't even go to Seattle anymore because of the fees. Before you know it, no one will need to park or drive in Seattle at all. Remember that Seattle is not the only city in the area, just saying.
253, Curly, we're just thankful we're wearing pants.
And now it is time for the letter of the
letter day. Letter of the day, Tom.
Gary, the 253-er with a 206 number.
Oh, wow.
So, Tom agrees that building a wall of linemen prevents people getting past. You guys better read this, because I just scrangled it. Great show, fellas, and good day, sir.
There you go. That's what I'm talking about, right there.
Why is it 206?
This country's very smart. We have very smart people.
Yeah. In the 253.
Out of time. Bye-bye.